talk about languages. Go to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter number 2. We have a Bible that we have in English that we read. We talked about God's inspiration and His preservation. You can't have one without the other. I'd like to talk a little bit, a simple lesson this afternoon regarding language. And in Genesis chapter number 2, we see in verse number 16, Genesis 2:16, we're going to see man hearing words from God for the first time. And in verse 16 it says, "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying," and here's what God said to the man, "Of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die." These are the words that man heard from God, and man understood them. Now, that's a supernaturally created language. Now, it's great we can read this in our old King James Bible, but Adam, I'm for sure Adam didn't hear English. But I'm also for sure what Adam heard, he absolutely understood. I don't know, and you don't know, nobody has any idea what language that was. But in Genesis 2, not only did God create everything in Genesis 1, but by the time we get to Genesis 2, we have a supernatural language that was created by God. In other words, Adam was able to communicate with his Creator. God just miraculously created it. And that's a huge blessing. Man could speak a language. It wasn't just unintelligible sounds. It was a clear language. Genesis 3. I don't know what it was, but it certainly was something, an intelligible communication system. Genesis chapter number 3, look at verse number 10. It says, verse number 9, "The Lord God called unto Adam and said unto him, Where art thou?" Adam knew exactly what God said. And he said, "I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." Now, like we said, nobody knows what the language was, but if you really stop to think about all the way back in the garden, and then all that time passed until now, it can't be anything other than a supernatural, providential work of God for Him to be able to preserve what He said over all that time. Where are the original autographs on that? There weren't any. I mean, it's, you know, Adam didn't hide it under a rock. This is the language I'm speaking, and we don't know. But we can trust God's preservation throughout it all. We know what He said to Adam. We also know, go to Genesis chapter number 11. We also know that whatever language it was, and we'll never know, that Adam and Eve had with God, we don't know what the language is, but we do know for sure that it was a universal language. We know that because in Genesis chapter number 11, watch what it says in verse number 1. "And the whole earth," Genesis 11:1, "was of one language and of one speech." So it was a universal language that everybody knew, and it was supernaturally created by God Himself. And I'd love to know more about it, but we don't. That's what we got, and that's what we need to know. So we have this, you see where it says it's this one speech. one source, one creator, and one human race. There were not all this talk about aliens and this only the human race. No. God said in chapter 11, it was one language and one speech. And so that's that we can trust God on that. So we have a supernaturally created language by God. But we have something interesting now that happens in the third verse. The Bible says in Genesis 11, back up to verse 2, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there, and they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime had they for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. They were concerned about themselves. We know that. But we have something here. We have something else that is supernatural. Not only did God supernaturally create the first language, but now He's going to supernaturally confound their language. And that's how we get, it says, well, in verse 3 or 4, it says, lest we be scattered. And so what happened was, we all know the story, they definitely were for unity. They wanted to unite in rebellion against what God told them to do. And so they stayed in that one place, and they wanted to make a name for who? Themselves. They didn't want to unite about obeying God. They wanted to unite around themselves and make a name for themselves. And we know that that is not, that's not good. That's not good. What did God tell them to do? Look at Genesis 9. God, verse number 1 of Genesis 9, blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and stay in one place. Nope. Replenish the earth. You're going to have to replenish the plenishing. And they didn't. They didn't want to unite around obedience to what God told them to do. Instead, they united in rebellion against God. And that's a horrible place to be. All right, so back to Genesis 11. Genesis chapter number 11. Look at verse number 5. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. So, God had to come down to see what was going on. Probably a report went up, and God, oh wow, I'm going to come down and see. So He went down and He saw for Himself. Wow. And the Lord said, He didn't say well, but verse number 6, and the Lord said, behold, the people is one. And they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there, here it is, confound their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them. He told them to replenish the earth. They didn't want to obey. And so now God, He's going to scatter them and He's going to force them to do what He told them to do. Upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore, verse 9, is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth. And from thence the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. And so they were compelled by God to do what He told them to do. You go replenish the earth. Don't stay in one spot. Now, what happened here in Genesis 11, verses 5 to 9, it was ordered
disorder by God. The people didn't want to obey. God comes down and see what's happening, and he orders disorder. And he confounds their language. Now, God didn't confuse them. He didn't confuse language. God confounded. It was confounding. Now, I want to draw this distinction. The word to confuse someone, that means you mix them up. You make somebody perplexed or puzzled. That is to confuse. To confuse is to make something harder to understand. If I were to use it in a sentence, I would say, I'm confused about the issues. Okay, you don't understand them. But to confound someone, it means to prove something or someone wrong. It means to cause something not to work. It also means to defeat someone's plan. So if I were to use confound in a sentence, I would use it like this. The police showed up and confounded the criminal plan. That's the difference of the use of the word confused and confound. It wasn't confusion that God created, for God is not the author of confusion. What did God do in Genesis 11? He confounded their language. He ruined their sinful plans, and God prevented them by his confounding. He prevented them from carrying out their plans. Now look at verse number 7 of Genesis 11. Let us go down and therefore confound their language. Now watch the end of this. That they may not understand. Now this isn't confusion. That they may not understand one another's speech. The languages that they were speaking weren't confusing, unintelligible languages. They were ordered languages. But the way God mixed it up, the way God confounded it, the way God spoiled their plans was that we'll just pick some random languages. Intelligible, understandable Italian. Intelligible, understandable German. Intelligible, understandable Mexican. Intelligible, understandable English. Let's just take those four. And so you've got a group of people here that speak that, and it's clear to them. No one's confused about it. But when this group of Italian language people say, hey, pass me a brick to those German people, he has no idea what... They can't communicate. It's not unintelligible language, but they can't understand each other's language. God did that on purpose, and that forced the scattering. God did that. Supernaturally confounding and at the same time creating other languages. Wow. That's cool. How'd he do that? It's just what he said he did. But that's an amazing thing. We see this show up in the New Testament with the gift of tongues to confirm what God said. And you imagine just being in a place where, brother, you can't understand anything but German. And all of a sudden, a man that has never spoken a day in his life can stand up and speak to you in a clear, intelligible language. Do you know God did that too? That's the power of God. So that's a quick overview of how God supernaturally created languages, how he supernaturally confounded the languages. And now I want to look at two more things for our lesson this afternoon. One is some Old Testament languages. Go back to Genesis 10, flip back a page. We have the first
language I'll mention in Genesis 10:22. The children of Shem, not Ham or Japheth, the children of Shem, and they were Elam and Asher and how do you say that? Arphaxad and Lud. That's a cool name. Name your boy Lud. Come over here, Lud. You big Lud, get over here. You know? That'd be a good name if you're... But and then the last one, and Aram. Aram. This line through Shem and his sons, his children, Aram, that's where we get Aramaic. That's the Aramaic language. This shows up in the Old Testament. It's also known as Syriac. And we see this show up. We'll take a look at a few spots. But that Syriac language, also known as Aramaic, came from Shem, his children. One of them was Aram, Aramaic. So go to 2 Kings, and we'll get the 18th chapter. 2 Kings 18. 2 Kings 18, verse 26. Then said Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and Shebna, and Joah, and Rabshakeh, speak, I pray thee, to the servants, here it is, in the Syrian language. That Syrian language, that's the Aramaic, it's the same thing. Syrian or Aramaic. So we see that in 2 Kings. Keep flipping, and you'll come to the book of Ezra. The book of Ezra, right after you get through Kings and Chronicles, go to Ezra 4. That'll be your next book, Ezra 4. And we'll see it again in verse number 7. Go to the middle of the verse. And the rest of their companions unto Artaxerxes, king of Persia, and the writing of the letter was written in the Syrian tongue and interpreted in the Syrian tongue. And so just the language now we're seeing show up in the Old Testament, the Syrian tongue, the Syrian language. Let's do one more. Go to Daniel 4. Keep flipping forward. And we'll go to Daniel 4. Right past Ezekiel. We'll come to the book of Daniel. Go to Daniel chapter 2. Look at verse number 4. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in what language? Syriac. Same idea. O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. So we have the Syriac language, the Syrian tongue, the Syrian language. All of that, we looked at those verses, Aramaic. So we have early Bible translations. We have the Old Syriac. We have Tatian's Diatessaron, old translation. And then we also have what's called the Peshitta. We'll be getting into those at some later lessons, but they all are from the Syriac or Aramaic language, the Diatessaron, the Peshitta, and the Old Syriac. Go back to Genesis chapter number 14. Because we'll look at another language in the Old Testament. We'll look at one more. And that would be Hebrew. And in Genesis chapter 14, Genesis 14, look at verse number 13. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew. That was a title that was given to Abraham. Who's that guy? Oh, that's the Hebrew. That was his title. Abram the Hebrew. And we're going to see now that Hebrew language was the Jewish people's language. We also see that language showing up
in the Old Testament. But Abram, he was given that title, Hebrew, by God in Genesis chapter number 14. Let's do a couple of Bible verses regarding this language. Go to Nehemiah. Keep going forward. You pass Ezra. Get past Kings, Chronicles, past Ezra, and then you'll get to Nehemiah, chapter 13. Nehemiah 13, look at the 24th verse. This Hebrew language is also called, let's see what it's called, Nehemiah 13, verse 24, and their children spake half in the speech of Ashdod, and could not speak in the Jews' language, but according to the language of each people. So this Hebrew language, it was called the Jews' language. Everybody knew that. Okay, that's Hebrew. It's known also as the Jews' language. Go to Isaiah 19. Isaiah chapter number 19. The Hebrew language is also known in Isaiah 19. Look at verse 18. In that day shall five cities in the land of Egypt speak the language of Canaan and swear to the Lord of hosts and shall be called the city of destruction. The Hebrew language is also known as the language of Canaan. And in the New Testament, go to Luke 23. And also get Revelation 9, Luke 23 and Revelation 9. Luke 23. Watch what this language is called in Luke 23 in the New Testament, verse 38. Luke 23:38. Bible says, and a superscription also was written over him in letters of Greek and Latin and Hebrew. So it's referred to in different ways throughout the Bible, but all of it is in reference to the Jews' language, which was Hebrew. The Jews' language of Canaan, Hebrew. Go to Revelation and we'll do keep your finger in Luke 23, though. We're going to go back there in 1 second. We want to look at Revelation 9:11. Revelation 9. Watch what it says here in Revelation 9:11. They had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon. But in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. So we see it's also referred very obviously as the Hebrew tongue. One more in Revelation chapter 16. And verse 16. Revelation 16:16. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue. So we see that again. The Hebrew tongue. The Jews' language, the language of Canaan. What is that? That's Hebrew. That's it. All right, so just look at it. Languages, just look at two in the Old Testament, Aramaic or Syriac, and then Hebrew or the Jews' language. God created those languages. New Testament, watch this in Luke 23. Go back there. In Palestine, in Jesus' day, we just read the verse, Luke 23, verse number 38. We know for sure that there were at least three languages, because verse 38 tells us was written over him in letters of Greek and Latin and Hebrew. Latin, during that time, that was the language of the government and the military. Latin was a very popular
official language is maybe a better way to say it. Hebrew, that was the official language of, well, we just went through that. Who? The Jews. And then finally, Aramaic, it was still, you still had that as a local language. But the language, other language mentioned here, the first one was Greek. And so Greek now became, at that time in Palestine, Greek was becoming, and it became, the world's language. And that's important. You had classical Greek, which if you go back in history, classical Greek was dated 1000 BC to 300 or 330 BC. And that's considered classical Greek. And then the language changed and you ended up having Koine Greek. And that language ran from 330 BC to 330 AD. That's Koine Greek. That just means common Greek. And then modern Greek made another change in 1435. So you have three streams of Greek. Classical, Koine, and modern. So in Palestine, at that time, what type of Greek was being spoken? Koine Greek. That common Greek. And it was all around that area, and that whole Mediterranean region, people all spoke Koine Greek. And why is that important? First century, Christ has died. He's risen again. You have this Koine Greek that is the world language. What does it allow the apostles and all the first, second, and third century gospel witnesses to do? God providentially put that language there. Because now they can bring the gospel anywhere. And if you have that whole region knowing Koine Greek, guess what they're all going to be able to understand? So that Greek language played a real important part. When it all came together as that language, people were able to understand the gospel. It made it a lot easier. Did God use supernatural sign gifts and tongues and all that? Yes, He sure did. He sure did. But this Koine Greek really allowed the preaching of the gospel to not only be preached, but also to be recorded. You know, a lot of our Greek manuscripts are all written in what type of Greek? Koine Greek. It allowed the scriptures to be recorded. Now, I think that's pretty cool. So just a short little Bible lesson on languages. God supernaturally created. He confounded, created some more. We see Aramaic. We see Hebrew in the Old Testament. The New Testament, we see Latin and Hebrew and Greek. And so we see that as well. And so who's the author of the languages? God is. God is. And He used languages to be able to get His Word recorded and scripted.